Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6, Sierra United November, and I want to welcome you to the final outreach class of the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This event will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a technician class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. to 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS server at either Echolink node number 96140, IRLP node 9614, or All-Star node 27404. For those who are interested in obtaining your license for the first time, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at voip@scarsvoip.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting into the course. Let me pause for just a moment. The material being presented is formulated from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at voip@scarsvoip.com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at, once again, voip@scarsvoip.com. This session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.scarsvoip.com. Do we have any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? If so, I ask you to come aboard. Okay, hearing no emergency traffic or other business, I understand, Mike, you are the first one to start the question this evening, KD0CDQ. I'm going to turn it your direction, but I want to thank each and every one of you for being here this evening and for being a part of the technician course this year and for allowing me to read the preamble. So once again, Mike, it's your turn to start the questions.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I appreciate your doing the preamble. And tonight, this is KD0CDQ Mike here. This is a very important section to me because it's safety. No matter what we do, we better get safety down. We're looking at Tango Oscar Bravo section, which is antenna safety, tower safety, and grounding, erecting an antenna support, and safely installing an antenna. The first question that I'll be covering is Tango Oscar Bravo 01. That's T-O or T Oscar Bravo 01. Now here we go. When should members of a tower work team wear a hard hat and safety glasses? When should a tower working team wear a hard hat and safety glasses? And let it drop and then we'll go to the answer. Okay. The answer in this case is C, Charlie, and again, these ABCDs do switch around on various tests, so don't go by the letter, but the answer is Charlie. At all times, when any work is being done on a tower, yes indeed, at all times, because I have seen more than one person hit on the head with a falling tool from a tower, and of course, the people that get hit on the head are those not wearing a helmet. That seems like a magnet. It looks like it goes for bare heads. So please remember of all things, and if you're a CERT member, part of your gear is going to be a helmet. You take that thing with you when you're working on towers. Otherwise, find yourself a helmet. Extremely important. Is there any questions about wearing a helmet and other safety gear? Especially if you're going to climb, you should have a climbing belt and be experienced on how to use that belt properly. Any questions on this question? Over. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Rick. Rick, I think you've got the next question. It's all yours. Over to you, Rick.
All right, Mike. Thank you. I have the next two, actually. My first one is Tango Zero Bravo 06. And the question is, what is the minimum safe distance from a power line to allow when installing an antenna? The minimum safe distance from a power line. A very sensible answer, and that is D delta. Enough so that if the antenna falls unexpectedly, no part of it can come closer than 10 feet to the power wires. That's just common sense. You don't want that thing falling over and getting tangled in any kind of power wires. So the answer, T0B06, is D delta. Any questions? I'll pause. All right, and the next one, keeping in the proper order, T0B07. Which of the following is an important safety rule to remember when using a crank-up tower? The correct answer is, in this case is C. This type of tower must not be climbed unless retracted or mechanically safety locking devices have been installed. These things aren't made for people to climb unless it's all the way down or it's held up somehow with guy wires or something to keep it from falling over. All right, that answer is C, and if there's any questions, come on ahead, and after a slight pause, Mike, I think you have the next one.
Six, Victor.
The next three questions in a row, that's how it kind of worked out. We all select the questions we want to use, so sometimes this does happen. So let's try T.O. Bravo 11. T.O. Bravo 11. Which of the following establishes grounding requirements for an amateur radio tower or antenna? Which of the following establishes grounding requirements for an amateur radio tower or an antenna? Now the answer they give here is, in this case it's the Bravo, local electrical codes. Being local electrical codes, we best know them because they're going to vary probably from county to county, and even a little town might have a difference. To reduce the chance of your antenna or mast being struck by lightning, follow the national or local electrical codes to properly ground these items during installation. Grounding will eliminate static electricity as well as protect against energy to the mast if the antenna comes in contact with live electrical wires. And be aware of that. I do know of a family that was putting up an antenna. This is a true story. Putting an antenna up, I guess, I don't know where it was, but they hit an electrical. And don't you know, the dad and the son, both were lost. It's a tragic way to go. It's very sad, but they didn't realize that electrical wire was above them, and also it was a bare wire. It wasn't insulated, and they got it. So please, please follow local electrical codes, and I can't use fake common sense because some of us don't have much common sense. Are there any questions on this one? Over. Okay, we're going to follow with the next question. T.O. Bravo 12. Bravo 12. Which of the following is good practice when installing ground wires on a tower for lightning protection? I was talking about lightning protection. The answer in this case is a Charlie. It's ensure that connections are short and direct. Short and direct. Lightning can also be conducted down a feed line into your station, right into your house. To prevent this, several manufacturers make devices designed to conduct this current to ground before it gets to your station. The first thing is a good, we use a 6-foot bar that's coated. Actually, it's only coated with copper. The inside is actually just a rebar. And we pound that sucker in the ground. Mine only sticks up about a foot out of the ground. It's a job to get it in there, but get that thing in the ground. And also, they sell these little tiny little cubes. Go to your radio store, go on your internet, and look for I can't tell you what they call it. I lost the name of it. But it's a little device. It runs you about $35, $40. It's going to be expensive, but it's a lifesaver because it goes between your antenna lead wire and the wire that goes into your home. And that thing will break, hopefully. it'll open up the circuit. If lightning does strike your mast and come down your cable, it's quicker than a blinking of the eye. And that little device will open, hopefully, and not burn your radio or set fire to your home. Does anyone have any questions about lightning protection? I may also add that a number of my friends disconnect their antenna when there's a chance of a thunderstorm. I just don't do that. I leave it hooked, smart or dumb, whatever it is, I always leave it connected. But when I go on a trip, I'm going away for a day or two, I do disconnect the wire. It's a good idea. I disconnect it on the house side of that breaker situation, that little box that melts away, the breaker. I open it on the house side so that the lightning can come down and strike that little box. Okay, and that's the end of it. Okay, here we go. I'm going to let it drop, and then we're going to go to the next question. Okay, I'm back here again. I think, the question I just handled. Okay, we're up to number 4. So it's Tango 0, Charlie 04. 04. What factors affect the RF exposure of people near an antenna station antenna, near an amateur station antenna? What factors affect the RF exposure of people near an amateur station antenna? In this case, all of these are correct. They're all correct. RF exposure safety measures are easy to apply and part of a good amateur practice. By understanding the reason for exposure limits and how to mitigate RF exposure hazards, you will be able to make more informed choices about designing, building, and operating your station. Again, this is all part of safety, and that's so important. The frequency and the power level of the RF field is important. The distance from the antenna to the person. So you should have some means of keeping that antenna away from anybody on your property. That's why we put it up in the mast, way up there. And radiation patterns of the antenna. That you'll get into in other sections of the material. The radiation patterns, you don't really want to be burning your neighbors either. That's why all of these questions, all of these choices are correct. Is there any questions about the effects of RF exposure to people near an amateur station antenna? Any questions? I believe that's my 3, and I'll send it back to Rick. Send it across the country just like a wizard. Here we go. Over to you, Rick.
All right. Thank you, Mike. All right. Well, my next question, the next 3, this is a favorite page of ours, and we got 5 in a row here on this page. All right. T0C05. Tango 0, Charlie 05. Why do exposure limits vary with frequency? The correct answer is D delta. The human body absorbs more RF energy at some frequencies than at other frequencies. The body absorbs more energy at some frequencies than it does others. Pretty straightforward answer. Any questions, I'll pause. All right, hearing no questions, I'll continue. T0C06. Which of the following is an accepted method to determine that your station complies with the FCC RF exposure regulations? And the correct answer is D. All of these choices are correct. So, A, by calculation based on the FCC OET Bulletin 65, and by calculation based on computer modeling, and by measuring of field strength using calibrated equipment. So the answer is B. All of the choices are correct. All right. Any questions on that one? And I'll pause again.
6, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Rick, KY6B here. I just wanted to amplify a little bit to one of the questions, since they were all correct, particularly the one listed at location A as an alpha. Mention the FCC OET Bulletin 65. I think it's important for each of us to become knowledgeable of what is contained in that bulletin. So I strongly recommend that when you have a chance, you research it, download it from the internet, and read it through and keep a copy of it. It's not necessary, in my opinion, that you do that right away, because I don't think it's going to be needed for the technician class that you'll be taking. But it's information you should know when you get ready to get on the air and you want to do things correctly. That's FCC OET Bulletin 65. Back to you, Rick, and how's the ukulele, sir? Over.
Well, thank you for those words of wisdom there, Gordon. Appreciate that. Just had a class today, and I think I'm quickly becoming the teacher's pet. She's got me playing the recorder flute, the ukulele. She wants me to bring my trumpet, and I'm also singing a duet. So she's got me real busy. But it's a lot of fun, so I'm enjoying it. I just need to get my fingers moving a little faster. All right, my next question. It's going to be the very next one. T0C07. Tango 0, Charlie 07. What could happen if a person accidentally touched your antenna while you were transmitting? These are very important things to consider, so I'm glad we're able to cover these things. The answer, correct answer is B, Bravo. They might receive a painful RF burn. So I don't advise holding on to the antenna while transmitting. And I'm sure the higher the wattage output, the more painful the burn. Any questions on this one?
N070 comment.
Go ahead, George.
Yes, N070, go right ahead.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. And again, welcome and good evening to, or afternoon or morning, if you're listening to the podcast, for all of the technician class students. Congratulations on making it to the last one of the classes, and you have a lot of excitement ahead of the game for you here with the ham license, if you decide to go for it. I bet you will. A comment on the question. Let me reset. Now, I cannot really speak for others, but regarding RF burns, if it ever does happen, and, you know, hopefully you will have followed safety where it doesn't, but if it ever does happen to you where you get a bit of an RF burn, my experience has been that at the very beginning, you don't feel it, you know, like for the first, you know, half a second or so, you don't really feel it there. But then it starts getting worse and worse and worse afterwards. You know, with a stove burn, you feel it right away, or it may feel a little bit, and then, comes back in. RF burns, the pain cycle for me was quite different. So if you do happen to wonder, why is my finger hurting or something, you may have come into contact with some RF and not realized it. The point is, follow safety. The second point is, RF burns are nasty. That's my comment from the having been there, done that corner. Back to net control, NL70, over.
And 6, Victor.
All right, well, I appreciate those comments. I haven't had any personal experience with it, so I'm glad you shared those experiences so others may avoid them in the future. All right, the next question is Mike, so I'll throw it over to Mike. Go right ahead.
Yes, Gordon had a comment. Let's let Gordon get in there, please. Over.
Well, thanks, Mike. Let me see if I've got it, guys. I just wanted to amplify a little bit. Hi, George, on what George was saying. It's a nasty feeling. And it does have a slight delay. George is correct. Before you really start feeling the pain, and I think it's a matter of that. Short period of time, what it's doing is it's heating up your tissues to the point where all of a sudden you say, ooh, I did something that I shouldn't have done. Along the same line, we've been talking about grounding. Grounding your station is very important for a lot of reasons. Makes your equipment work better. makes your antenna feel more happy. But it also drains away any RF that is on your equipment if you are not properly grounded. I know in the old days, you know, you could pick up a microphone and all of a sudden go, ooh, because it was hot with RF. It was coming down the shield and dissipating in your body. Touching the transmitter, as an example, would give you the same effect. But if you're properly grounded, that doesn't happen. It's drained off and you're safe. And that's what we're talking about is safety. Go ahead, Mike, KY6V, over.
Very good point about that. And also remember to ground your radios and your tuner. I have everything grounded. I don't know if it works that well. I got a nice big fat wire running out and grounded outside. I don't want to find out. But yes, ground everything that you have. It's so very important. You know, on that last question, I've got some dark humor, a little bit of Simpsons in me. It says touching the antenna could cause television interference. I can see a Simpsons story where he gets lit up when he touches an antenna wire when it's being transmitted. Pretty dark, but it's kind of interesting. King will let it drop, and the next one's going to be Tango Oscar Charlie 08. Be Charlie 08, letting it drop. Okay, here we go with this one. Which of the following actions might amateur operators take to prevent exposure to RF radiation in excess of FCC supplied limits? Suppose you get more. What should you do? Well, the answer is relocate your antenna. Alpha in this case, relocate your antenna. You should also lower the power or simply transmit less, it says in the book. Although amateur radio is basically a safe activity, in recent years there have been considerable discussion and concerns about the possible hazards of electromagnetic radiation, called EMR, including both RF energy and power frequencies. That's in the 50 and 60 hertz electromagnetic field range. Extensive research on this topic is underway in many countries, they say. In addition to the ongoing research, much else has been done to address this issue. For example, the American National Standards Institute, among others, has recommended a voluntary guidelines to limit human exposure to RF energy, and the ARRL has established an RF safety committee. And a committee, it actually has doctors and scientists on it, they tell me, serving voluntarily to monitor scientific research in the field to recommend safety practices for radio amateurs. Letting it drop, and then I'll give you an address. If you really want to get into these safety hazards, you can get into www.arrl.org, which is our standard, arrl.org, and go to RF-radiation and electromagnetic field safety. So it's radiation and electromagnetic field safety. The ARRL has a write-up on that. Maybe a good idea to look at it in your spare time. Are there any questions? Well, I think I'm going to pop you with the last question for myself. It's Tango Oscar Charlie 011. So Charlie 011. What is the definition of a duty cycle during the average time for RX exposure? What's the definition of a duty cycle during the averaging time for RF exposure? In this case, it's Charlie. It's the percentage of time that a transmitter is transmitting. So the percentage of time a transmitter is transmitting is what we're talking about here, the RF exposure. And now, there was a little article I read about the sky is falling. I'm going to let it drop and I'll read just a quick paragraph. It said a sky is falling. Most hams do not have difficulty meeting these requirements. In fact, most hams are already ready to compensate with the maximum permissible exposure, the MPE. Some should fear, however, that they have to do difficult measures and perform extensive calculations or find paperwork with the FCC. The ARRL says it's wrong on all accounts. The evaluation is often as easy as using tables to determine what your antenna is far enough away from people. And that too, ARRL has a FCC RF exposure on their website that you can check on. And as RF exposure, you can just put it in your computer and it'll give you those answers. So be aware of the dangers, please, of antennas and the power that's coming out of them. They look so innocent. Okay, I'm going to turn it over, the last one. Oh, and then, oh, I've got one more after this too, but right now it goes to Rich. But please, if you have a mast, a climbable mast, please think of some way to block the base, either a chain link fence or something around the mast, because children love to climb. And we sure don't want to have a neighbor's child climb up the mast just for fun and get injured by falling or getting RF exposure if you're transmitting. So please, put some protection around your mast if you have a mast. Don't leave it to chance. Okay, as I'm looking here, oh, Rich does have the last question. Here we go. Thank you all for listening to my rambling. Okay, Rich, go ahead. It's all yours.
All right. Thank you, Mike. All right, my next question, which is the last one for the evening, how does RF radiation differ from ionizing radiation or radioactivity? The correct answer, my question is T0 Charlie 12. Sorry about that. T0 Charlie 12, how does RF radiation differ from ionizing radiation, radioactivity? The answer is A, RF radiation does not have sufficient energy to cause genetic damage. That is the correct answer. And one reason why I chose this one is because of my recent experience with radioactivity. As I mentioned Sunday night when I introduced myself, by the way, I don't think I said my call sign. I'm NC5IR, November Charlie 5, India Radio. But I had to undergo 22 radiation therapy sessions, and I was talking to the doctor, and he was explaining all this stuff to me. But what the radiation, when it comes to zapping a tumor, is it causes the DNA chain to break up, and it can't the cell can't split, divide, and reproduce, so that causes the tumor cells to die, and the body just whisks it away and disposes of it. So that's where I'm at right now. Hopefully the tumor is getting smaller, the vertebrae is growing bigger, and everything's improving. In a few months, hope to get another scan, and everything will be all clear and back to relative normalcy. Well, it's been a pleasure. I didn't pause to ask if anybody had any questions, so let me pause it and list questions.
And I also have another comment on the previous question.
Go right ahead. It's all yours.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Regarding protecting the tower from unauthorized intrusion or encroachment, there's been a lot of articles. There have been a lot of articles written. There's been one or two recently where we might conclude that best practices would definitely include posting a no trespassing sign and no entry sign on some type of little protective fence around the tower, no matter how small the tower is, or you know, even if it's just a vertical, because there have been sometimes, and I'm not a lawyer, this is not legal advice, but for best practices, there have been successful arguments made that when those signs existed, greater responsibility is seen by the people who are not authorized to be there to avoid the area. Without the signs, there are other risks that the ham operator may not want to face. So just some other literature and articles on the topic. Thank you. Back to NetControl, NO70. Over.
George, I appreciate that. I never thought of a little sign. That's a good idea, just for something, because if something happens, we are liable. There's no way we're going to be able to bail out of it, I'm afraid, because the public doesn't like strange things like antennas. Every new neighbor I get, the first thing they ask me, they don't ask me my name. They ask me, what's that? Is that a radio antenna? I always say very quietly, yes, it is. And I don't go any further unless they probe, because you just don't know what's on people's minds. But it is an unusual thing. People see them, and they're inquisitive, and children are the most inquisitive of all the creatures around us, are they not? Okay, now, I want to say one thing about Gordon. Gordon's name is being used on the radio out here terrifically over and over, every news broadcast, that hurricane, Hurricane Gordon. Now, all they tell me is on the Gulf Coast. But all I know is we're getting rain out here in Kansas, and we've got fast-moving clouds. We're not used to this here. So that wherever that hurricane is, thanks to Gordon, they stuck his name on it. What are we going to do? That's all I've got for tonight. God bless everybody, and be safe no matter where you are and what you're doing. This is KD0CDQ in what used to be sunny Kansas. Over.
May I defend myself, Michael? KY6B.
You know, I've only heard it on the radio. I guess they're spelling Gordon the proper way. Yeah, defend yourself, Gordon. Please do.
Yes, unfortunately, they are spelling it correctly. Those who know me well know that they can't dress me up and take me out. So, obviously, there's something wrong with the equation. And my other retort is that forget about Gordon. Watch out for Florence, who's out in the middle of Atlantic. She is getting big and getting mean. So that's the end of the storm. May I make a comment, Mike, in closing about what we've got on the website? Over.
Yes, please do. Please give us a rundown on what you want to tell us, please. Over.
Muchas gracias, mi amigo. KY6V here. Well, we'll be closing out the publication on our front page of the website here in the next day or two. We're going to leave it on there so that the recording of tonight can be picked up by those that want to use it. But I want to make sure that everybody understands, and if you have friends that are interested in getting into this hobby, that this information on the course that has just been taken care of will be left on the website. It's found down in the outreach corner section, right-hand sidebar of our website. And the way this thing works is that the VEC and FCC combo publish a question pool every 4 years for each one of the licenses. And they stagger those releases. So this year, the technician license was changed effective July the 1st, and it will be staying intact until 2022. Next year, the general license will change from its current pool on July the 1st, and we'll be running a session here next year for the general. So at any rate, what I'm saying here, let me buy nickel, is that we try and leave that information, the study guide information, the course material, the question pool, and the recordings intact on our website for a long, long period of time. And that's for friends of yours or anybody that is interested can use that information for self-study. And we also leave ourselves open that the email address that's posted on our website can be used for anybody that's self-studying on that exam to send us a question if there's something that is puzzling them in their pursuits. So with that, thanks one and all. Back to you, Mike. I'll let you let whoever's going to sing. KY6V, over.
Well, maybe Rick's tuning up his ukulele or guitar, whatever he has there. But I had a treat yesterday. We were working an event, and the net controller was a 14-year-old high school student who just earned his extra license. Isn't that amazing? And he was so good, because it was from, 6 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, he was net control, and he was clean. If you didn't see the young man, you would think he's an experienced old hand. He's very good, and so encouraging to see a young person at the age of 14 excited about amateur radio and going all the way and grabbing his extra at that early age. That's a beautiful thing. Now, I don't know if we want to close with music. That's going to be up to Rick. God bless everyone once again, and enjoy life. That's all we got. KD0, CDQ. Back to the airwaves.